Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. It is Hard Knock Radio. On the phone line with us is Mr. Glenn Ford from the Black Agenda Report. And we wanted to talk to Glenn for a couple of reasons. One, he always has his finger on the pulse. But more importantly, he is very familiar with a person who is in the news right now. You know her as Ambassador Susan Rice. Now, for people who don't know, she's come under fire because people in the Senate, in particular the Republicans, felt that she deliberately misled people by talking about the situation in Benghazi, which is in Libya, claiming that that they were upset that she claimed that the reason why four Americans were killed was the result of people being upset over an anti-Muslim movie, when in fact it was a terrorist attack. But for people on the left, there's a reason why they should be opposing Ambassador Susan Rice, and we wanted to talk to Glenn Ford about that, and it has very little to do with Benghazi and movies. So, Glenn, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm all right. Glad to be in your presence and on your wonderful show.
When we talk about Susan Rice, what immediately comes to your mind about her?
War in Africa. She is this administration's point person in Africa, and for all the aggressions that this administration is committing in Africa. But for the last, I guess it is about 16 years now, she has been instrumental in aiding and abetting and covering up the genocide in Congo, which has claimed 6 million lives.
Can you break that down for us? I think a lot of people listening are going, what genocide in Congo? What are you talking about? What's happening?
You know, that's testimony to the effectiveness of the United States cover-up of the direct perpetrators, the people who are most complicit in the death of 6 million people in Congo since 1996. Those are the U.S. allies in Africa, the U.S.'s closest allies in Black Africa, Uganda, and Rwanda. Those two countries invaded the Congo in 1996, setting off the violence that has claimed those 6 million lives. The United States has moved mountains to shield those two countries from condemnation by the international community. Very specifically, two reports were developed in the United Nations. One, a mapping report that outlined in great detail the violence that has occurred in the Congo from 1993 to 2003. That report was for a very long time suppressed. It concluded that the actions of specifically Rwanda and also Uganda in Congo might be characterized as genocide. And those are very, very strong words when you're talking about diplomatic circles. The latest report, which the United States through the offices of Susan Rice, suppressed until it could no longer be suppressed. The report had to be leaked months and months ago, so people were aware of the contents, even though Susan Rice did everything she could to block its formal release at the United Nations. That report concludes that Rwanda and Uganda are actually the controlling forces in the M23 so-called rebel group in the Congo that recently captured the city of Goma and unleashed a situation that threatens a second wave of genocide in Congo unless it's brought under control. Who can bring it under control? The United States, because the United States is the main military, economic, and diplomatic benefactor of Rwanda and Uganda. And in fact, the United States is overall complicit in this genocide that's claimed so many millions of our people.
If you're just tuning in, that's the voice of Glenn Ford from the Black Agenda Report, talking about Ambassador Susan Rice and her long history, as he said, war in Africa. I want to take us back a little bit, Glenn. I know you've been talking about the Congo, and for many people who haven't followed foreign affairs, this is new to them, and it's something that I think is warranted of a certain amount of urgency. But I want to go back to 96. With Ambassador Rice under Bill Clinton. One of the legacies of Bill Clinton was that genocide in Rwanda happened on his watch. And he has expressed he's remorseful that he didn't do more. Let's talk about the relationship between Bill Clinton, Susan Rice, what she could have and what she didn't do with the Rwandan genocide.
Susan Rice has been part of his national security team since 1993. That's a year after he was elected to office. And in 1997, she became the point person on Africa in his administration. That's right after the invasion of Congo by Rwanda and Uganda. In terms of Bill Clinton's remorse over his actions or inactions in Rwanda, that's phony, and he's full of it. And so was Susan Rice on this score. The Rwandan mass killings occurred after the invasion of Rwanda by Rwandan exiles who had been part of the Ugandan army. They launched an assault. They are almost certainly responsible for the shooting down of an airplane that contained the presidents of Rwanda and Burundi, which set off much of the major part of the fighting. And they, of course, were this force in Rwanda under Paul Kagame was in essence a part of the Ugandan army. No sooner had Kagame taken over Rwanda than they launched the invasion of the Congo. The excuse was that they were following people who had killed Tutsis in Rwanda. But in fact, they stayed and virtually annexed, and that's what UN reports also conclude, annexed most of the Eastern Congo and have not left since. That Eastern Congo region is probably the greatest treasure trove of precious metals in the world. And what Uganda and Rwanda are doing is acting as middlemen now that they control the mines and the routes for shipping to international markets. They act as the middlemen, the go-betweens between these multinational mining concerns and the mining fields, taking their cut. Most of these multinational corporations are Western-based, including many that are U.S.-based. And that's the United States' interest in this project. They are using Uganda and Rwanda as their military henchmen in order to keep these extremely valuable mineral resources under their control, keep these resources out of the control of any Congolese government, which starves the Congo, of course, not only of its sovereignty, but also of needed revenues to raise that country out of terrible poverty.
Let me ask you this, Glenn. When we think of resources that are in the Congo that the United States, as you pointed out, is trying to protect, our government itself doesn't have a resource treasury where, you know, you go to the some place in Washington and you could get diamonds and gold and all that. Are we talking about corporate interests, that the United States is protecting corporate interests who are now in the Congo and benefiting from all those minerals and resources that are there, or is this something different?
Of course, it's like that, and we can compare it to oil. All of the oil-producing countries want to export oil. Nobody's trying to withhold oil from the oil from the international market. These countries feed their people and build their infrastructure from selling oil on the international market. So it's always been a canard that the United States needs to deploy the by far largest military in the world in order to make sure that the U.S. has access to oil. What the United States wants to do is be in a position where it can deny access to oil to other countries that don't have much oil of their own, such as China. It's the same thing with these precious strategic minerals, as they call them, in Congo. Every country that has these strategic minerals certainly wants to put them on the world market. Nobody wants to withhold them from the world market and starve themselves of funds. But the United States and its strategy in the world would like to keep these strategic minerals under its de facto military control. That's what Uganda and Rwanda are there for, so as to be able to deny access to it to U.S. competitors in the world. Read China.
Wow. Who would have thought? When we think of Susan Rice, I've heard people say, and I've interviewed her a few times, she's a very charming, very nice woman. I had no idea of her foreign policy history to the degree that she was intimately involved or not involved. Well, I shouldn't say not involved, not engaged when she could have been, when we talked about Rwanda to stop the genocide. But I didn't realize that this woman is worth like $40 million. I didn't know that she had substantial holdings in the XL pipeline coming out of Canada and all that. Who is this woman, and how would you contrast and compare her to Condoleezza Rice, who we have long demonized and said is the Antichrist? But when we look at Susan Rice's record, it's very scary itself.
Condoleezza Rice is a smooth and cordial diplomat compared to Susan Rice, who really, in diplomatic terms, is pretty damn thuggish. We need to add, in terms of her holdings, much of that, most of it appears to be in mining. Lots of it's in Canada. And if she were to become Secretary of State, she would have a clear conflict of interest, because when you make deals with foreign countries, you have to get clearance through the State Department, and it would be in the interest of her portfolio for all of these prospective deals with these energy resources for Canada to go ahead and get clearance. Susan Rice became most bellicose when she was not in government during the Bush years. She was howling and making more warmongering noises than any of these crazy Republicans were. She advocated that the United States set up a air and naval blockade of Sudan and actually bomb Sudan's ports and airfields, declare a no-fly zone. You know, when the U.S. declares a no-fly zone, that means we will destroy all of your military infrastructure. She was more aggressive in terms of Somalia than the Bush regime. She was very early on urging that U.S. military action in Somalia. The Bush regime finally sponsored, backed the Ethiopian invasion of Somalia in December of 2006, which led immediately to what the United Nations called the worst humanitarian crisis in Africa, worse than Darfur. The United States then proceeded to cut the amount of food relief that went to Somalia in a policy of draining the pool, a classic anti-insurgency operation to starve the citizenry so that the Shabab, that the force that resisted the Ethiopian U.S.-backed invasion, so that the Shabab wouldn't have a civilian population that was well-fed enough to help them. At every juncture, Susan Rice has called for war. She's credited with convincing Barack Obama to militarily intervene in Libya. And she in very undiplomatic fashion, kept on parroting these false, phony news reports that Muammar Gaddafi's soldiers were gulping down big handfuls of Viagra and systematically raping Muslim women. This was propaganda put out by the so-called rebels that the United States sponsored in Libya.
What was her response to the lynchings and all the slaughter? 50,000 black people, many of them migrants, as well as black Libyans, were horrifically killed. Nobody wants to talk about that. What was her response to that? We've seen the videos. We've heard those on-the-ground reports. What's her take on that?
Not a word. She said not a word, and this is not a woman who bites her tongue. And this really gets us to Benghazi Gate. We do, at Black Agenda Report, have something to say about that. The Republicans and the White House are talking about a false story. What the White House, Senator Collins, the so-called moderate Republican, probably describes the situation best. What Condoleezza Rice was trying to do in the aftermath of the killing of the U.S. ambassador was to circulate a narrative.
You mean Susan Rice?
I'm sorry, yeah.
You got them all confused.
As showing my age, yeah. This Rice, the current Rice, was trying to continue a narrative, the narrative of the Obama administration, that the Libya aggression was a success story because these wonderful people that the United States has armed as the foot soldiers of NATO in the attack on Gaddafi, that this represented freedom for Libya, and that these were the good guys, and America had won allies in the Arab world, and that was the U.S. contribution to the Arab Spring. Well, these are not the good guys in any sense of the word. The jihadis that formed the core of the ground force in Libya, and now what there is the semblance of a government in Libya are Muslim fundamentalists, Salafists. They have within their ranks people who are indistinguishable from Al Qaeda. I don't go around using that word Al Qaeda all over the place because there are lots of organizations among the Salafist tendency in that part of the world who are quite capable of killing U.S. ambassadors. They also attacked the British ambassador. And the point here is that the United States was telling the American people a lie about the nature of the people they were supporting in Libya. The reason that the CIA was able to dispatch two drones very quickly over the site of the attack on the ambassador was because those two drones were already in the air on what is a constant surveillance of Derna. Derna is a city not far from Benghazi that, it turns out, provided the most fighters per capita to Al-Qaeda in Iraq. It is a hotbed of Salafist jihadi activity, so much so that they are under constant surveillance by U.S. drones. So the administration has always mischaracterized the nature of the people that they've made an alliance with in Libya, just as they mischaracterized the nature of the people that they are arming and supporting diplomatically and financing in Syria. They've made a strategic renewed a strategic alliance with Saudi Arabia and Qatar to put the United States on the side of these Salafists as they fight secular forces in the Middle East. It is a guarantee of the mother of blowbacks. It is a repeat of the U.S. strategy in Afghanistan when those same actors, Saudi Arabia and the United States, along with Pakistan, virtually created the global jihadist network. It did not exist until the early 1980s when the CIA and the Saudis spent billions of dollars creating the network. That's where we got Osama bin Laden from. Now the U.S. is at it again in its hysteria about what the Arab Spring might bring. That's the real story. The Republicans aren't opposed to that. To that stance in the Arab world. We saw that in the third debate between Obama and Mitt Romney. He has no problems with this alliance with the jihadis, and they're just trying now to gain some political points by saying that the administration didn't have, wasn't diligent or vigilant enough in terms of security. But they're not opposed to this policy. We're coming at them from the left on this.
My last question to you, Glenn Ford, is the response to the political attacks that we see directed towards Ambassador Susan Rice. There's been a call to arms. People are asking us to go out and oppose John McCain. There's a lot of articles and commentary coming in the black blogosphere that she is racially being attacked. We saw just the other day Fox News pulling up her activities in Stanford, where she was somebody who advocated that they have a black studies program, and they're making a big to-do about that. This whole racializing or bringing forth racial attacks towards Susan Rice, which in turn leads to people overlooking some of the stuff that you just described over the past 15, 20 minutes to protect her because we see this attack on her because of her race. How are we supposed to navigate that? And what is your response to those pundits that are leading the charge and demanding that everybody get on board and protect Ambassador Susan Rice from any more racial attacks?
This is a betrayal of Africa. If these folks, like Marsha Fudge, the incoming chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, who called a press conference with many of the female members of the caucus to defend Susan Rice's good name and praise her for her distinguished service, if they think that responding reflexively to a perceived insult, and I'm sure it was an insult from a McCain to a prominent black political operative is more important than 6 million dead Congolese and a genocide that is ongoing and seems about to be reignited. If they think that defending the good name of Susan Rice is more important than fighting a U.S. policy of instigating wars all over Africa that causes massive displacement and starvation as well as violent death, then something's very, very, very wrong with our black political class.
Something to think about. One of the concerns that they've raised is that if Susan Rice becomes the ambassador, then you have a triumphant, meaning the attorney general is black, Barack Obama is black, Susan Rice is black. And while that on the surface, when they are attractive people who are articulate and seem to be well-read and well-schooled, may be a source of pride, the concern that I personally have is that it now becomes black faces heading the empire from top to bottom that now becomes the face of villainy, if I can use that word. The villain is no longer the white face, but a black face from America. And I think that is going to have long-term effects. Am I wrong in thinking that way?
You know, Cynthia McKinney relayed to me an incident when she went to a conference in Indonesia and a delegation came to meet her at the plane as a courtesy. But one of the young ladies in the delegation, she clearly didn't know quite who she was greeting. And as soon as Cynthia stepped out of the plane, the young lady said, "Ooh, Condoleezza Rice." Now, is that Is that the image that we're projecting to people in Indonesia, that is a black woman notable is seen as as a Condoleezza Rice, an emissary of George Bush in the world? We are now the face of U.S. imperialism, and that is, of course, because of President Obama's policies. But for the Secretary of State, as well as our president, to be black and waging war against international law around the world makes me cringe.
Definitely. And I had similar experience when I was in Lebanon, where I was jammed up and asked, how come black people support George Bush? And when I told them that we didn't, then they brought up the fact of Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell. And when I told them that black people didn't support that, then they quickly jammed me up about how come we don't see any protest against them. When I told them that we do protest, we were asked, well, how come we don't see it on BET, which is exported all around the world via Viacom? And when I told them that we didn't own BET, that's when laughter and a look of astonishment took place, because the next question was, well, why doesn't Puff Diddy and Jay-Z and Oprah and all those people who have money, why don't they buy BET so that you could tell the truth to the world? And there wasn't a real good, clean answer for that
Yeah,
at that particular time.
and now you have no disclaimer whatsoever, because black folks do support President Obama's not necessarily his policies. I don't know if people even know what those policies are. People seem to not be interested in what he does, but how he does. Not interested in who he's attacking in the world, but who domestically is attacking him. And the same apparently goes for Susan Rice.
Definitely something to think about. I should also remind people as we close out, the minerals that are being a source of contention in the Congo, many of them are used in computers and cell phones and what have you. So all of us who use these devices don't necessarily have our hands clean, and we should be concerned because there's massive rapes. As you said, there's killing, there's the slaughter. All that is going to ensure that those minerals come in the hands of U.S. companies, which in turn make many of the products that we use and find very convenient. And as we saw just a week and a half ago, many of us were standing on long lines during Thanksgiving holidays, waiting for Black Friday to get a discount on some of those very same electrical devices that we find to be so attractive. Those devices contain minerals from the Congo.
That's right. But you know, we shouldn't worry that the prices of our iPads and other little appliances would necessarily go up, if we're talking selfishly here, would necessarily go up if the Eastern Congo was restored to the sovereignty of the Democratic Republic of Congo. The crooks and criminals in Rwanda and Uganda are taking their cut off of the value and price of these minerals. Why shouldn't their cut go, in fact, to the treasury of the Congo? I doubt if we would see any squeeze in prices. I kind of think that the prices are probably inflated because of the chaos that has descended on the region, and because of the cost of the armed occupation by these foreigners of Eastern Congo.
Definitely something to think about. Glenn Ford from the Black Agenda Report. You can watch, you can see him, you can read him, you can listen to him. BlackAgendaReport.com. Thank you so much for breaking it down about Susan Rice, a continuation of Condoleezza Rice, if I may add. Something to think about. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
on today. If you ask them to fight again, what do you think they'd say? I'm not trying to be funny, I'm just trying to get my point across. War is world's enemy number one, and it's time that we called it off. Ow! Stop the war! Loud! Good God! Hear me saying, don't put it off another day. Everybody singing,
stop the war!
Ow! Nah, 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 nah.
Don't put it off
another day. All we got to do is Lord. Cemeteries are overflowing. The leaders of the world claim victory's near, but the death list keeps right on growing. And what does a mother get in return for the life of the son she's lost? A few measly pennies a month, a medal, a grave, and a doggone cross that says,
stop the war! Now!
Good God, hear me saying,
don't put it off
another day. Enough blood's been shed by the wounded and the dead. Oh, enough blood's been shed by the wounded and the dead. Oh, oh,
stop the war.
Listen.
Now.
Good God, everybody.
Don't put it off.
Oh, not another day now.
Stop the war.
Oh, nah, 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 nah.
Don't put it off.
Oh, another day. This is a message to the leaders of the world.